Please stand by. Welcome and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, IMS Common Service Layer, Can You Live Without It? Today's program will last approximately 60 minutes and will include live questions after the presentation. In this teleconference, you'll learn how IMS 10 and its IMS Common Service Layer have truly come of age to provide significant benefits to both the single system IMS user and the users of the large parallel Sysplex. The speaker for today's teleconference is Mr. Alan Cooper, IMS consultant in IBM Europe Northeast Region. Alan, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. Today, I'm going to talk about the IMS Common Service Layer, and in particular, I want to show that it is no longer a luxury item, but that it has grown to become an indispensable part of every IMS implementation. So moving on to slide two, I'll begin by setting the scene. The Common Service Layer, or CSL, was introduced as an option in IMS 8, and it was enhanced in IMS 9, but many customers, especially those not exploiting shared database or shared queues, did not perceive any worthwhile benefit in using the Common Service Layer. However, I believe IMS 10 should change this perception with its extensive range of CSL functions. CSL now provides the operations environment of choice and is a prerequisite to many other key functions. There is a widespread misconception that the Common Service Layer is just for the large, complex IMS customer. But the reality is that most of the CSL benefits apply equally to all IMS customers, both large and small. In addition, the IMS developers and the Silicon Valley Lab expect the Common Service Layer to be in place, and I hope to show that this is so when we look at the recent IMS 11 announcement towards the end of this presentation. So slide three then shows my agenda. I'll start with an overview of CSL, and then we'll look at the enhanced operational environment, and then we'll take a high-level look at the various other CSL functions, including the enhanced resource management functions, Sysplex terminal management, automatic recon loss notification, and many more. Finally, I'll indicate the features of IMS 11 that further exploit and indeed extend the Common Service Layer. So skipping over slide four to slide five, the Common Service Layer is an architectural concept. It's made real by a set of address spaces which provide system management functions to one or more IMS systems. The set of IMS and CSL address spaces forms an IMS Plex. And in IMS 8, 9, and 10, there are three types of CSL address space. As we'll see later, IMS 11 adds a fourth type. Each of these address spaces is built using the base primitive environment, just like IMS Connect and CQS. The purpose of CSL is to provide an infrastructure for various aspects of systems management. And again, I want to emphasize that most of the benefits of CSL apply to all IMS customers, both large and small. So moving on to slide six. The first CSL address space I'll review is the Structured Call Interface, or SCI address space. The SCI code is executed in cross-memory mode and enables communication between address spaces within the IMS Plex. And so a copy of SCI must exist wherever there are other CSL address spaces, IMS control regions, or operation single points of control, SPOCs, that we'll be looking at shortly. Any address space that needs to communicate with others in the IMS Plex starts by registering with SCI. If it passes a security check, the SCI authorizes it to join the IMS Plex and so be able to communicate with the other address spaces within that IMS Plex. So the CSI enables other IMS Plex address spaces to talk to each other. Slide 7. The Operations Manager is the next CSL address space that I'll discuss. It receives commands from a command-issuing program called a SPOC, and we'll see more about these shortly. It routes the command to one or more command processing systems, and which are usually IMS control regions. Before doing so, it can perform a command authorization security check. As the control regions process the commands and respond, the OM gathers in all the command responses and forms a consolidated response that is sent back to the SPOC. To enable easy understanding by the SPOC, this response is formatted as an XML string. If your IMS Plex contains multiple control regions, then you'll probably choose to have multiple OMs. But in principle, you can work with just one OM somewhere in the IMS Plex. The operations manager, together with the communications facilities provided by the structured call interface, provide most of the general purpose functions that we'll be looking at during the rest of this presentation. These are the functions that apply equally to the user with a single control region or the user with multiple control regions within the IMS Plex. However, the CSL does provide some functions specifically for those customers who are running multiple IMS systems using shared database and or shared queues. And to further facilitate the management of these larger systems, there is a third type of CSL address space, the resource manager. So turning to slide 8, the resource managers in an IMS Plex are responsible for two types of function. One is managing the global status of certain shared resources within the IMS Plex, and two, managing processes that operate across the IMS Plex, such as global online change. And as for the operations manager, you can have a single copy of the RM in the IMS Plex, but you'd probably choose to have multiple RMs when you have multiple control regions. And when you do have multiple RMs, then they share global information by storing it in a resource structure in the coupling facility. So turning to slide 9, let's look at the first of two examples of an IMS Plex. This is the case where the customer just has a single self-contained IMS control region, no data sharing, no queue sharing. The CSL is implemented with a single operations manager and a single SCI address space alongside the IMS control region. Other SCIs may also be required on other LPARs if you wish to run TSO SPOCs, for example, on those other LPARs. This simple configuration opens up a significant range of new functions, and especially once you're on IMS 10. It enables, for example, use of the enhanced operations facilities, dynamic resource definition, dynamic changing of language environment runtime options, and so on and so forth. And we'll look at the full range of functions shortly. For slide 10, this is my second example of an IMS Plex, a move to the opposite end of the spectrum. It shows a four-way IMS Plex with shared database and shared queues. Each of the four systems has the full set of CSL address spaces, and the resource managers share data in a resource structure in the coupling facility. In addition to all the CSL benefits outlined on the previous slide, this customer can also have the benefits of global resource status management, coordinated global online change, Sysplex terminal management, and more, as we'll see shortly. So, slide 11 leads us into the next section, where I'll overview the enhanced operations management facilities provided by the common service layer. So, slide 12. I'm sure I don't need to remind you that the traditional operator interface for IMS has been IMS terminals, and especially the master terminal. From MBS consoles and IMS terminals, you can enter over 60 different IMS commands, start, DBR, assign, and so on. These traditional commands are nowadays referred to as the Type 1 commands. Many old-timers like me are quite fond of the Type 1 commands, but the fact is they were not designed to a standard, they're not consistent, they're not intuitive to new operators, they lack functions such as wildcard characters, and they are mostly used to enter a command into just a single IMS system. Now, the CSL does provide some usability enhancements for the Type 1 commands, but the CSL also introduces a completely new and a small set of Type 2 commands, which address these issues of the Type 1 commands that I just mentioned. Type 2 commands cannot be entered at an IMS terminal. Instead, they must be entered via a SPOC. Type 2 commands also provide new functions not available with type 1 commands. And we'll be looking at type 2 commands in just a moment. But before that, let's consider some other aspects of exploiting the CSL for IMS operations. So slide 13. The CSL enables the use of an operations interface called a SPOC. A SPOC is just a computer program. One type of SPOC interfaces with a person, the operator, and IMS provides two SPOCs designed for operators to use, the TSO SPOC, which is an ISPF application, and there's a PC-based SPOC called the IMS Control Center. But a SPOC can also be a component of automated operations, and IMS provides REX programming functions which allow you to write REX SPOCs. IMS 10 also introduces a standalone batch SPOC, a batch utility where commands are entered as sysin data. In all cases, a SPOC can issue type 1 or type 2 commands. On each command input, the SPOC specifies to which IMS systems the command is to be routed. It can be to one or multiple IMS systems. But remember, of course, that the SPOC communicates directly with an operations manager, and it's the operations manager that actually sends the command on to the one or more control regions. When the OM gets back all the command replies, it returns the consolidated response to the SPOC in XML format. If the SPOC provides a human interface, like the TSO SPOC, then one of its jobs will be to format this command response on the operator screen. In the case of the REX SPOC, the REX program will have to parse and process the command response. And in the case of the batch SPOC, the command responses will be formatted as print lines to sysprint. So slide 14, this is where I talk about the type 2 commands. For general purpose resource status management, there are just two type 2 commands, query and update. Time doesn't allow me to go into more detail, but they all have a standard syntax that's simple, intuitive, and user-friendly. In most cases, resource names can include wildcard characters, and also filters can be specified to limit the extent of the resources chosen. Query, clearly, is an alternative to slash display, and update is an alternative to a whole range of type 1 commands, such as start, stop, DBR, assign, and so on. The list of resource types supported with query and update commands grows with each release of IMS. In IMS 10, the list includes transactions, fastpath routing codes, programs, databases, areas, database groups, and the MSC resources, physical links, logical links, and MS names. In most cases, a particular operator function, such as DBRing a database, can be performed with either a type 1 command or an update command. However, there is a growing number of cases where a type 2 command can perform a task is actually not possible with a single type 1 command, for example, starting a DDB together with all its areas. So, we have the query and update commands for resource status management. There are other type 2 commands in support of new functions, such as dynamic resource definition. In IMS 10, these other type 2 commands are initiate, terminate, delete, create, import, export, and queue. And we'll see some of these shortly. So moving on to slide 15. This mentions some of the benefits of using the TSO SPOC rather than an IMS terminal for entering commands. Firstly, you can enter type 2 commands as well as type 1. And the type 2 command responses are displayed as a table, which is especially relevant for the results of a query command. You can scroll up and down or sideways. You can sort on different columns. You can set up shortcuts. You can look at previous commands and their responses and edit those commands and re-enter them. And of course, as I've said several times already, you can use the TSO SPOC with type 2 commands to exploit new IMS functions such as dynamic resource definition, ACB member online change, and so on. So slide 16. There is, of course, a lot more to operating IMS than just having an operator enter commands. Customers need automation, and this includes the ability to enter command-issuing transactions. It's also generally essential to have an audit trail of commands, their responses, and unsolicited system messages. And it is in IMS 10 that all these extra facilities become available. So let's look at these newer operational facilities. Slide 17 considers the REX SPOC. IMS provides REX functions that allow you to write REX SPOC programs that issue IMS commands, type 1 and 2, and to retrieve their responses. It will also allow you to specify routing and timeout values. The REX SPOC actually appeared in IMS 8, but significant XML parsing function was added in IMS 10, and this has really greatly simplified the programming needed for handling command responses. Slide 18 overviews the batch SPOC that was also introduced in IMS 10. It is simply a standalone batch program that uses execution parameters to specify routing and timeout values. The IMS commands themselves are input via sysin and are executed serially. The command responses are written to sysprint in the same format as for the TSO SPOC. Slide 19 considers the Q type 2 command, which is also introduced in IMS 10. It allows you to enqueue or dequeue transactions or LTERM messages, and so it's great for enabling a human or an automated operator to submit a command-issuing transaction. It also provides a function for all IMS users that was previously only available in a shared queues environment, namely the ability to dequeue transactions. When a SPOC enters a queue command to submit a transaction, there may be a transaction reply. If so, it's not returned to the SPOC. Instead, it's written to an audit trail, which can then, for example, be viewed using the TSO SPOC. So moving on to slide 20, we'll look at the Operations Manager audit trail. Introduced in IMS 10, the audit trail uses the ZOS system logger to log IMS commands, which are entered via an OM, and to log their responses. It's also used to log unsolicited messages from control regions and CSL address spaces. And, as I've just mentioned, it's also used to log any replies from transactions entered with the Q command. And multiple OMs, of course, can share the same ZOS log stream. The TSO SPOC provides a standard and powerful function for directly viewing the audit trail, and we'll see an example shortly. But you can also write a REX SPOC that subscribes to the audit trail in real time. Before the CSL, many users used the IMS secondary master terminal to print or record an audit trail of IMS activity. You can eliminate the auditing of command processing by the secondary master, but before IMS 10, you had no control over auditing of unsolicited messages to the secondary master. Now, with the advent of the OM audit trail, it's possible to disable all unsolicited messages from being written to the secondary master. Alternatively, the Type 2 AOI exit, DFS AOE 00, has been enhanced so that you can use that to selectively delete messages from going to either the primary and or the secondary master terminals. So, on to slide 21. Here we see an example of using the TSO SPOC to view the OM audit trail. And obviously, you can select log records by date and time. The DFS messages are color-coded. Now, as it happens, the DFS messages on this slide all happen to be information messages and are displayed in white. But if there were warning messages, they would be shown in yellow, and action messages would be shown in red. If you click on a message number, you will be routed via the Internet to see that message in the Messages and Codes manual. And for the logging of commands, the actual command response is not immediately shown, but if you click on the blue text in the response line, the command response will be displayed. So, just to summarize this section, the operations facilities provided by the common service layer, especially in IMS 10, have, I believe, achieved critical mass and now provide the breadth and depth of function necessary to make SPOCs and the operations manager the operations interface of choice. So, moving on, slide 22 introduces the enhanced resource management facilities provided by the common service layer, and especially in IMS 10, as we will see. So system. Slide 23. The traditional way of defining the application resources in an IMS system is to define the resources with assembler macros and perform system generation to create a new modblocks library. This can then be activated with either a cold start or a modblocks online change. Even if you wish to make just a very small change or addition to your application resources, you still have to reprocess the complete set of definition macros in your modblocks gen. And further, a modblocks online change requires a switch from the old to the new modblocks library. And this switch requires IMS to quiesce all processing. So there is always an availability impact of the online change. So moving on to slide 24, IMS 10 introduces another exploit of the common service layer, dynamic resource definition, or DRD. It's an option specified at cold start time that replaces the use of modblocks gens and eliminates the modblocks libraries. Instead, resource definitions are stored in a resource definition dataset, the RDDS, and the definitions are manipulated using type 2 commands, namely create, update, and delete. And once a resource has been stored in the RDDS, it remains there permanently or until explicitly deleted. DRD thus provides a number of benefits. Firstly, and especially if you also use ETO, your stage one input deck will be very small, and in any case, you'll rarely have to perform an IMS gen. Secondly, the second benefit, when you use the type 2 commands to change the resource definitions, only updated resources will need to be quiesced. Unchanged resources will continue to be 100% available. And thirdly, the resource definitions held in the RDDS are portable and can be copied from one IMS system to another, for example, from development to test, and so on. So slide 25 summarizes the DRD implementation. On the right of the diagram, warm starts, as always, reload resource definitions from checkpoint records on the IMS log. Nothing has changed there. Cold start on the left automatically imports the resource definitions from the most recently used RDDS. To add, change, or delete resources, the user issues the appropriate commands via SPOC. And remember, this could be the batch SPOC, so that you could well be doing the DRD updates with a batch job in the middle of the night. At the next system checkpoint following these changes, IMS will automatically export the changes to the RDDS. Now, you typically have three or four generations of RDDS used in a cyclical manner. Each time an export takes place, the complete set of resource definitions is written to the RDDS containing the oldest generation, the least recently used. Slide 26. I've mentioned several times that the DRD commands, being type 2 commands, must be entered through a SPOC, and the TSO SPOC has been extended to simplify this task. This extension is the Manage Resources application. It can be accessed from the TSO SPOC or directly from the IMS application menu that's actually shown on this slide. Some DRD commands, such as delete a database, would be simple to type in, but others, such as create a new transaction, could be quite complex. So the Manage Resources application allows you to create the command by filling in the blanks on an ISPF panel. And there are two sets of panels, one for the less experienced user and one for the more expert user. So it's slide 27. This shows one of the screens for creating a transaction. And in this case, it's the list view, the view for the less experienced user. There is one transaction attribute per line, and all potential attributes are included as you page up and down. It explains the possible values for each attribute. Now, when you create a new resource, you base it on either an existing resource or on a descriptor or template. So most of the attributes will already have an initial value when you use these panels. So you simply then change the selected attributes as appropriate. And slide 28 shows the screen as it would appear if you had selected the command syntax view, the one for the more experienced user. In this case, the whole create transaction command is on a single screen. You just overtype the necessary attribute values. And that completes my very brief overview of DRD and how it exploits SPOCs and indirectly operations managers and the common service layer to provide the ability to dynamically create, change and delete application resources. Slide 29 moves on to consider online change. As we've just seen, DRD is recommended to be used instead of ModBlock's online change. But online change is still needed in IMS 10 for changing ACBs and MFS formats. Online change was introduced many years ago, and the original technique remains available and is called local online change. When IMS 8 introduced the common service layer, it also introduced a new technique for doing online change called global online change, and its initial objective was to provide a coordinated online change across multiple IMSs in an IMSplex. Instead of each IMS system having its own ModStat dataset, the IMSplex has a single shared OLCStat dataset for the same purpose. But the key difference is that local online change is initiated with type 1 commands, whereas global online change is initiated with type 2 commands entered via a SPOC. In IMS 8 and 9, if you just had a single IMS control region, then there was no reason to use global online change. However, in IMS 10, this changes. IMS 10 introduces a new flavor of global online change that is equally applicable to users of single or multiple IMS systems. And this new flavor is ACB member online change. So turning to slide 30. We saw a few minutes ago that DRD allows ModBlocks resources to be added or updated without disrupting the availability of unchanged resources. ACB member online change provides exactly this benefit when adding or changing ACBs, in other words, DVDs and PSBs. DRD and ACB member online change both avoid quiescing the whole system by not performing a library switch. And for ACBs, the new or changed ACBs are put directly into the active ACB library. And this is shown in slide 31. As always, item 1 at the top left, you start by performing the necessary ACB gen into a staging ACB library. Then in step 2, in the lower part of the slide, you use the online change copy utility to make a backup of the active ACB library before you update it. And then in step 3, you perform the actual global online change via a SPOC. As always, this is a two-phase procedure, prepare and then commit. Each phase uses the init OLC command. The essential keyword on the init OLC prepare command is type ACB member, followed by the names of the relevant DVDs and PSBs. As part of the OLC commit process, the new and changed ACBs are copied from the staging to the active ACB library and brought into use. And so in summary, by exploiting the operational aspects of the common service layer, you can perform ACB online change without disruption to unchanged ACB resources. So slide 32, this introduces a CSL feature that became available back in IMS 8, namely Sysplex Terminal Management. And I'll just look at this briefly on slide 33. This optional feature is specially for the shared queues user. Its primary objective is to create a single system image for end users on the SNA network. It allows them, for example, to start a conversation while logged onto one IMS system, disconnect, and then resume that conversation after logging onto a different IMS in the shared queues group. And it would probably be used in conjunction with VTAM generic resources, where you don't have control of which IMS you log onto. With STM, the IMSs use the resource manager to manage global information kept in the resource structure in the coupling facility. The resource managers keep lists of resources and check, for example, that an L term on one IMS is not a transcode on another. The resource managers also ensure that names are unique where necessary within the IMS Plex, and, for example, prevent a user ID logging on twice to two different IMSs within the IMS Plex. And the resource managers track the status of nodes, users, and L terms, both operational or command status and user status. So, for example, if an L term was stopped on one system, it would become globally stopped. The user status is maintained can be conversational status and or STSN sequence numbers for SLUP devices, for example. So, moving through slide 34, we'll now take a quick look at the other exploiters of the common service layer. Slide 35. Automatic RECON loss notification came out in IMS 8. Now, although it surprises me, I'm told by customers that it still does happen that RECONs sometimes go bad. And DBRC happily handles the situation once it has realized that there's been a problem. You may well have many DBRC jobs active when a RECON goes bad, but the operators can't delete the bad RECON and reallocate it as the new spare until all the jobs which have the RECONs open have actually tried to access them, recognized the problem, and reconfigured their RECONs. This may take seconds, minutes, or even hours. When automatic RECON loss notification is enabled, all the DBRC jobs using the same RECONs can use the structured call interface to communicate with each other. If one DBRC detects that a RECON has gone bad, it immediately notifies all the other DBRCs so that very quickly all the DBRCs will reconfigure their RECONs. There will be no operational problems about when it's possible to delete and redefine the bad RECON. When the common service layer is in place, exploiting this facility simply requires deploying a global DBRC SCI registration exit, which ensures that each DBRC does connect to the appropriate group when it starts up. So, it's easy to implement, and it makes for one less operational issue to have to worry about. Moving on to slide 36. A new DBRC feature in IMS 10 is parallel RECON access. This is an optional facility that provides data sharing of the RECONs so that separate DBRC images can all access the RECONs concurrently with appropriate locking, logging for backout, buffering, and buffering validation services being provided by the product transactional VSAM. At first sight, it may seem that this has nothing to do with the common service layer. But when you think of the multiple systems sharing the two active RECON data sets, it's clearly essential that all the DBRCs are using the same pair of RECONs, and so automatic RECON loss notification, discussed on the previous slide, is clearly a prerequisite, and so the common service layer, and specifically SCI, is also a prerequisite to parallel RECON access. Slide 37. IMS 10 also introduces transaction-level statistics. This is the option for IMS to log transaction statistics for each message rather than just once for the whole application schedule, or for each BMP checkpoint interval rather than for the whole program execution. You specify the default for the whole system in Proclib, and you can override it for individual transactions in the transact macro, for example. To change your choice for a particular transaction, you could update the transact macro, perform a mod blocks gen, and then do a mod blocks online change. But much easier is to use the type 2 command at a SPOC, the update command, to set the required transstat for a transaction. And by the way, this works whether or not you've implemented dynamic resource definition. Slide 38. This discusses another of the IMS 10 enhancements, online resource global status. And this is the second of the facilities that apply just to users with multiple control regions in their IMS Plex. In this environment, the resource managers within the common service layer can track the global operational status of databases, partitions, DDB areas, and transactions, any or all of these resource types. The resource managers store this resource operational status information in the resource structure in the coupling facility. When an IMS system is cold started, it gets the operational status of each relevant resource from the resource structure. If a database, for example, had been globally DBR'd, and at cold start, it would come up in a stopped status. In the case of a warm start, normal or emergency, the information in the resource structure is queried to see if the status of a resource was changed while this IMS was down. If so, IMS will adopt this global status when it comes up. Otherwise, it will simply resume the status that applied when IMS terminated. Now, global status can only ever be set with global operator commands. For example, a DBR command with a global keyword, or a Type 2 update command with the explicit or indeed default scope all parameter. Note also that global status only applies within online systems. Batch and utility access to databases must still be controlled with appropriate DBRC flags. So slide 39 relates to the MSC bandwidth performance option that also came out in IMS 10. Now, you don't actually need the common service layer to get the performance benefits of this enhancement, but there is an additional feature, the ability to gather and or reset performance statistics for each link and to display them in real time. The functions that do this are the query and update commands entered at a SPOC. So, slide 40, serial program management. This relates to the third IMS feature that's specifically for the user with multiple control regions in the IMS Plex. It was again introduced in IMS 10. Previously with shared queues, if you had some programs defined as serial, which shed type equals serial on the application macro, it was left as an exercise for the user to ensure that this was enforced across the IMS Plex. In IMS 10, if you have the CSL implemented with resource managers and the resource structure, then IMS will automatically ensure that only one copy of the program is ever scheduled at a time within the IMS Plex. Incidentally, there is no change in the way serial transactions work. A serial transaction is always processed on the IMS system where it originates, which is possibly a key requirement for transactions that issue IMS commands. So transaction serialization is not affected by this line item. Slide 41 moves on to talk about language environment runtime options. Occasionally, it's necessary to run a transaction or a BMP with a changed LE runtime option. And this is not a trivial thing to do. Typically, it requires recompilation and linking, maybe stopping and starting dependent regions. However, a CSL facility introduced in IMS 8 makes it much more simple and convenient. So moving on to slide 42, LE itself allows an exit to be called at program schedule time. And this exit can modify the runtime variables. IMS provides such an exit. This exit inquires of IMS if there are any runtime option overrides that have been set for this transaction or program being scheduled. And if so, the exit applies those overrides. The specific runtime options themselves are specified and managed using Type 2 query, update, and delete commands at a SPOC. And also, in addition, the update command is used to enable or disable the exit function itself. If appropriate, you can also specify the overrides for a specific L term or user ID, or indeed any combination of L term, user ID, transaction, and program. But you have to remember that the exit only runs at program schedule time, and so will only see the user ID or L term for the first message on the queue for the transaction being scheduled. Moving on to slide 43. It's not just IMS itself that exploits the common service layer, but a number of IBM's IMS tools do so as well. The first I'd like to mention is QCF, the Queue Control Facility. Since version 3, QCF uses the structured call interface for all its inter-address-based communications. And slide 44 shows this diagrammatically. The QCF user runs the QCF client, an ISPF application. Each IMS Plex has a QCF server running within it. And the QCF client and QCF server use SCI to communicate with each other. Further, the QCF server then uses SCI to communicate with the IMS control regions in the IMS Plex. I should perhaps make it clear that although QCF uses SCI, it is not a prerequisite that IMS itself should be exploiting the common service layer. Slide 45 mentions the other tool that I'd like to highlight, namely Command Control Facility. Previously, most users of CCF used APPC to route commands to the target IMS system. CCF version 2.1 adds the option to use the common service layer for this purpose. CCF can run as a SPOC, sending commands into the operations manager. And this eliminates the requirement for APPC and removes a small number of command restrictions for APPC. Additionally, when run under ISPF, CCF is effectively an advanced function TSO SPOC. So moving on to slide 46, I want to briefly look ahead at what's coming in IMS 11. At the beginning, I said that the IMS developers assume that the common service layer will have been implemented on your IMS systems. You've probably already spotted that a lot of the new features in IMS 10 require the CSL, and I think you'll see in the next few minutes that the same is very much true for IMS 11. So, moving on to slide 47. IMS 11 provides the ability to quiesce a database temporarily across an IMS Plex, but without stopping it. And the command to do this is the Type 2 update command. IMS 11 has the ability to set on a database trace for selected databases. Again, it uses the update command. IMS 11 introduces the option of using 64-bit virtual addressing for the FastPath global pool and or the ACB pools. To display pool statistics requires the use of the Type 2 query command. IMS 11 also extends the query command to support L-terms, nodes, users, and user IDs. IMS 11 introduces the ability to monitor the OTMA commit mode 1 internal message queues. It uses the query command. In IMS 11, the OTMA routing descriptors, which were introduced in IMS 10, can be fully managed online. You use query, update, create, and delete commands. IMS 11 introduces the transaction timeout facility, and yes, you've guessed it, you use Type 2 commands to set and change the timeout values. IMS 11 also starts down the path of allowing IMS exits to be refreshed online. Initially, it's only a few exits that can benefit, but again, this facility requires Type 2 commands. In this case, query and a new command, refresh. I've saved the best for last. A key line item in IMS 11 is the Open Database Manager, and this is now covered on slide 48. ODBM enables access to online IMS databases from just about anywhere, locally or via TCP/IP. ODBM is a new, and it's the fourth, type of common service layer address space. It can receive IMS data requests from local ZOS applications, such as DB2 Stored Procedures or ZWAS, or it can be accessed from remote clients using TCP/IP via IMS Connect, and this includes all flavors of WAS. IMS Connect uses SCI to communicate with ODBM, and so IMS Connect and ODBM, for example, can be in different LPARs for flexibility. The API is fully documented, so you can write your own ODBM clients to use SCI to access IMS databases if you so wish. Having received a data request, ODBM uses SCI to communicate with the appropriate IMS control region, referred to as the data store. The operations manager is also a required component because it enables control of ODBM with Type 2 commands entered as a SPOC. So, thinking about this and the previous slide, I think there can be little doubt that the IMS developers do now assume that the common service layer is standard in customer IMS environments. So, skipping over slide 49, we come to my summary on slide 50. I hope I've convinced you that in IMS 10, the common service layer really has come of age. It's free, and there's a wide range of facilities that exploit it. Or in other words, without large subset of new IMS function that simply can't be used. Much of this new function is widely regarded as being highly desirable, features like dynamic resource definition. So the bottom line is that the common service layer should now be seen as a vital and integral part of every production IMS system. Some CSL function is specifically designed for the very large IMS customers with multiple control regions in their IMS plexes. But most of the CSL benefits can be gained by customers who are not into data sharing or queue sharing, who just have a single IMS system. So, if you're on IMS 10 and not using the CSL, then I'd really suggest you implement it soon to gain the maximum benefit from your investment. If you're on IMS 9 or even IMS 8, I'd also recommend implementing the common service layer as soon as possible. There are some benefits to be had immediately, but it will also give you a chance to get experience of working with SPOX, for example, and put you in a very good position to quickly exploit the new and attractive features in IMS 10 and 11 when you do migrate to these releases in the future. So thank you very much, and now I'll hand it back to the operator.
Thank you, Alan. Now we'd like to ask that you participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have live questions. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key, followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. For our first question, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. Question 2. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference at the right level? Press star 1. Not technical enough? Press star 2. Or if it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Question 3, what version of IMS are you currently on? If version 10, press star 1. If version 9, press star 2. If version 8, press star 3. Or if version 7 and below, press star 4. Question 4. For those not on IMS 10, what is your planned use of IMS 10? If you plan to install IMS 10 in the next 6 to 12 months, press star 1. If you are interested in moving to IMS 10 within the next 2 years, press star 2. Or if you're not interested in IMS 10 at this time, press star 3. And our final question today, we hope you'd enjoyed the teleconference. Please let us know if you're interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And we thank you all for your responses. At this time, we'd like to take your questions. If you do have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone telephone at this time. Once again, for questions, please press star 1. We'll pause for just a moment. And again, that is star 1 for any questions or comments at this time. And Mr. Cooper, there appear to be no questions or comments at this time. I'll turn the conference back to you for closing remarks.
Thank you very much. One of my colleagues has just pointed out I made a mistake, so I'll just correct that while I can. Page 48, where we were talking about the IMS 11 Open Database Manager, ODBM does not use SCI to talk to IMS. It uses the standard ODBA interface that's been around for a while. So I'm sorry about my mistake. Anyway, so you're paying good money for IMS. The IMS developers are continuing to provide major new functions, and many of these functions rely on the common service layer. So if you've not done so already, implement the common service layer without delay and position yourself to maximize the return on your investment in IMS. So thanks again.
That concludes today's conference call. Have a pleasant day.